What's up?
Hey, I'm back. Is
I'm
this
looking, I'm scrolling through Twitter, so our conversation never worked. I'm back
Whoops.
at it, boys.
Is this the show?
Is this the show? This is the show.
This
I mean,
is the
that's the name of the show right now. Is this the show?
title.
Is this the show? Yeah, I should probably now that we decided that it is the show, I should probably get through my my bits then.
Oh
But
yeah.
do you want to talk about the hiatus stuff?
Yeah,
How long has it been? It's
has it been 3 months?
3 months?
Two months? Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah,
Yeah.
3 months. 3 months. Almost.
So at the end of May, yeah, wow, shit, 3 months. So at the end of the
The May.
Mayflower.
I'll re-edit this to make it go in order.
Awesome. So at the end of May, I got out of the good old United States Air Force. Was kind of bouncing around trying to find a place to live. Tried to make it in Delaware for a little bit, but that didn't work out because of some extenuating circumstances. So I moved back to the great state of Ohio and currently living with my dad. So that's a good time. But yeah, so the
But like
hiatus.
the behind the scenes thing is that we had a every other Wednesday to go out, and then like you had to move like 2 days later.
Yeah.
Like we had a session going, and then you were like, "Oh, dude, I need to move." Like they just told me. I was like,
Yes.
"No shit, dude. You should go do that.
Yeah.
Why are you worrying about our stupid podcast show?
Yeah, I
Go
got super short noticed
and
and
find a home first."
yeah. So, yeah, that's why we were gone for so long. I was figuring out being homeless and stuff. A lot has happened since then.
So many things that we had way too many items on our list, and then decided to just say fuck it and just do everything on our list.
Yeah, pretty much. And if you want to hear that, we recorded a very special bonus episode, which we didn't originally intend to be a bonus episode, but it kind of worked out that way.
So I don't know if this whole thing is the bonus episode, or if from the top we're just like, this part's gonna be a real episode. I don't know. We'll freeform it. It's fine. It's fine. So I have some things too, because I took two trips in the middle of all of our hiatus, and obviously haven't been talking about them on the podcast. So
Yeah.
I went to so before I talk about this, music festivals used to be like a thing in my family. Me and my sisters would go to a music festival every other year-ish. And we went to Bunbury 2 years ago. That's in Cincinnati. Saw a lot of good stuff there. But last year we didn't have time to go see each other for one. So this year we decided to go to Forecastle Festival, which is in. Can you hear that train?
No, I
Because I can
can't.
hear the train. Okay. Good. So we decided to go to Forecastle Festival, which was in Louisville, Kentucky, for 3 days in May. The headliners there were Arcade Fire, Chris Stapleton, and Modest Mouse. And all those guys are really, really good. The last headliner was Arcade Fire. And so besides them, we saw a bunch of cool acts from Kurt Vile to Courtney Barnett. We saw Vance Joy. And then I wanted to highlight these three up-and-coming acts that haven't quite made the mainstream yet, but we'll probably hear, like, one of them is already kind of breaking through the mainstream right now. So, first one was St. John, all capital letters, because fuck it. He's like a trap artist, and I know you don't know a lot about the rapping,
No.
but yeah, he's real good. He makes like some party banger like stuff, and he's a young dude with a lot of energy. Like that's he and my next one, act. We're on the same stage. It was kind of like the electronic, the EDM /
BDE
rap stage. Yeah, the BDE stage. Exactly. Well, if it says anything to you, on the second day, T-Pain performed on that stage. You know T-Pain, like from early 2000s, Buy You a Drink, Bartender.
Nope.
No, Shorty Snap. No.
Nope.
Damn, you are so white.
I'm too white for this.
Oh my god. I mean, even Midwest white kids know Buy You a Drink. But anyway, so St. John is real cool. He had like a whole like background like image slideshow thing. Not a slideshow. That makes it sound
he put up on an Apple keynote weird. In the middle.
An Apple keynote.
Welcome to my TED Talk.
Yeah. But he has a song out there called Swoosh, which is super killer.
Is it about basketball?
No, it's about balling. It's about like being hype.
Swoosh.
And it's funny too because he was performing on Sunday, mm-hmm. and he has a line in the song where he says, "Who the fuck has to go to work on a Monday?" Like, and I was like, it must be in his rider to perform on a Sunday so he can say that and be realistic about it.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's St. John. And then there is Morgan Saint. She's like a good, like, I'm not going to say like a Lana Del Rey type. No, it's more like, shit. I'm blanking on names right now. But it's like EDM but pop.
Okay.
Like mixed in. There's been a lot of that around in the past couple years, but Morgan Saint is a good one of those. And she's like just seems like a genuine person, and she had a lot of fun.
Nice.
And so yeah, she's cool. And then the real big guys that are probably breaking into the mainstream right now, and we'll probably see them around Grammys time next year.
Mm-hmm.
Rainbow Kitten Surprise, which is a really stupid name, but it's just it's a fucking great band, man. It's the guy. So there are like five people in the band, and they kind of sound like Kings of Leon,
mm-hmm.
But kind of don't. Like the main singer also raps.
Oh wow.
And, he does like backflips and shit.
What?
And like the songs are like really heartfelt and awesome, and they've made two albums, and they came out with one this year, so that's why I think it might be on like upcoming artists. They might be on an upcoming artist Grammy thing, nominated for one of those.
Word.
But yeah, they're on the road right now, mm-hmm. but we saw them at Forecastle, and it was awesome.
Hell yeah.
Probably one of the best concerts I've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that first trip. And then I just got back from the second trip, which I took for my 24th birthday.
Happy birthday!
Thank you. Thank you. It was on the 7th, and it was funny because when we were scheduling this, I was talking to my dad about scheduling it, and my birthday came up, and he was like, "It's your birthday on the 7th?
And I was yes, like, Dad.
Yes, Dad. You probably shouldn't have vocalized that to me, your son. But he was surprised that I was turning 24. And we did a whole lot of stuff. I went to first going to Cleveland, went to Fathead Brewery, went to Great Lakes Brewery, went to the farmer's market up there,
mm-hmm.
went to.
did you see a lot of white people?
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Actually, like the market and the breweries were pretty diverse because
I was referring more or less to the farmer's market, but
right. You have to take into account that I live in Lima, yeah. Ohio, and where I'm at is 95-96% white, so there's a whole bunch of white people here, so any diversity really, like, that's why like I liked actually being in the airport, because mm-hmm. there were like different accents. Like one of my joys of being in the airport is listening to people, which is really fucking creepy to say out loud
a little bit,
but like anyway, this is going, getting ahead of myself. So we went to Cleveland, and then after Cleveland, we went to Buffalo. Spent the night in Buffalo, went up to Niagara Falls.
Nice.
Went around Niagara Falls, and while I was in Niagara Falls, I caught a Raikou on Pokemon Go.
Oh, damn.
So that's great. I played way too much Pokemon Go around a bunch of American treasures, and it's really might be disrespectful, but shit, I needed that Pokemon Go. I needed that time.
I feel like the only place you shouldn't play Pokemon Go is probably the 9/11 Memorial.
That is true.
I feel like everywhere else is fair game.
Right, which is weird because we also went to Albany, New York, and we went to the New York State Museum. Mm-hmm. That place has a 9/11 Memorial. So, I'm not going to say that I did play Pokemon Go, but I didn't play it in the exhibit. So,
okay. So you're good. You're good.
So from an ethics standpoint, I don't know. Before that, we went to the Finger Lakes, went to a winery there. Mm-hmm. What else did we do? We went to Seneca Falls. We went to the Seneca Falls Convention Museum, mm-hmm. which is freaking great, which is where I was when I was bugging you about this episode, actually.
Nice.
Then we went, we went to Albany, and then from Albany, we went to Boston. Mm-hmm. And then when we got in Boston, we ate a lot of lobster, and we went to the JFK Museum, and I think that's about it, but that's a lot of stuff. So,
nice.
And then I had to fly, and my parents, because my dad had a meeting the day after in Connecticut, they just dropped me off at the airport, and so I went to the terminal, and I was on time, everything was going good, and then
everything
I got my
got
flight.
Fucked.
My flight got canceled. It was a flight for 11:30. It got canceled, and the only way they could get me in Columbus was to get me into Columbus by the time I had to work on Monday, was to get me the flight that was scheduled at 8 o'clock, but got delayed to 9:15 later in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time at Terminal A in Logan Airport. Shout out to Terminal A and Logan Airport.
I mean, at least you didn't have to spend your time in the terminal with Don Jr. and Robert Mueller.
Ooh. I will say this about Terminal A. It was away from, like, the hustle and bustle of the security lines.
Nice.
So I didn't have to deal with that noise and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. And then, like, either end of the terminal had bars.
Nice. That was going to be my next question, because that's
literally the
only way.
I drank a bit. I didn't get super messed up, but I drank a bit. I had a steak burger there that gave me the tummy rumbles.
Oh, no.
After, but I was fine. And then I finished On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder there.
Nice.
While we were on our trip, I finished Sharper Objects, Gillian Flynn. Which I was just talking to you about, but it might be in the same episode, so I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
I don't know what's happening anymore, but that's all of that stuff. What was that, 20 minutes, 15 minutes? I don't know.
That was, let's see. I actually started a new recording, 14 minutes.
Okay, that wasn't as bad as it could have been.
Yeah. I wrote a blog post, in the start of July, when I was, like, getting settled back into being in Ohio, and I'd read a Facebook post that mentioned this bill, its working title is to prohibit a court from using a parent, guardian, or custodian's refusal to allow a child to undergo gender-based treatment as a basis for determining custody of a child. That's a very long title. But the language of the bill would essentially require anyone working in the employ of the state of Ohio, teachers, school nurses, etc., if they have reasonable suspicion that a child is acting in such a way that is not congruent with their assigned gender, They have to write a letter to that child's parents. This is dangerous. Mm-hmm. Because there are already massively high rates of suicide in the trans community,
right.
The majority of which happen to people under 25. So coming out is I'm going to be very delicate here because I'm not trans. I'm not in the LGBTQ community. I do my best to be an ally when I can, but I don't have firsthand experience here. But as I understand, coming out is a very personal and
right.
private thing. It's each individual's decision when they want to come out and who they want to come out to. And this bill is essentially taking the power away from these kids to come out on their own terms, essentially
right.
forcibly outing them to their parents. And they may undergo bullying or abuse or any number of horrible things from their parents. Or in rare cases, the parents may be very accepting and everything's a great world with rainbows and unicorns and everything's great. But that's not what's going to happen. This bill presents a clear danger to children in the state of Ohio, and I felt so passionately about this that I actually wrote an email to all 99 House representatives in the state of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And I received, let's see here, I'm going to see if I can find... So I cannot find the actual email, which was the first response that I received
mm-hmm.
from the Ohio State House. I'll try and find it so we can include it in the show notes, because it's a doozy. In the response, it thanked me for supporting... the legislation that was proposed, but the legislation that was proposed was not the bill I was talking about.
Right.
It was
I saw that on Twitter.
It was about the Ohio's attempt to start their own Stand Your Ground law, which in and of itself I have a whole shit ton of issues with.
Yeah.
But it thanked me for my patriotism and dedication to the Second Amendment and Republican principles. And, so my response was very simple. Do you even read the emails that you're responding to? I got an email follow up from a aide to the, representative who was actually, see if I can find out what this dude's name is. He was one of the two representatives who actually introduced House Bill 658. So just to add insult to injury, he responded to the wrong bill, even though he's the one who
Amazing.
Co-sponsored the one I'm writing about. So I got a response from one of the aides in his office who was like, yeah, we're doing this new thing where we're automating email and it gets dumped in a box. And then we respond to all the letters in that box and yours must have gotten sorted
right.
into the wrong box. And, but we'll definitely let the representative know that you're opposed to this bill. And great.
Great.
So,
yeah. Well, it's, you know, Dylan, it's hard to get free, good free help these days. So,
true.
You know, it's super problematic that we would even be automating that process.
Yeah,
do you think that representatives of your state would have a? I mean, it is a legal right of the citizenry to share their opinions on these bills and
mm-hmm.
for them to be heard.
Yeah.
So they need to, you know,
get
their shit together.
Yeah. But some positive news on this front was I received, I think about out of the 99 copies of the same email I sent, I think I got 37 responses besides that one. The majority of them were helpful and well-worded and nice, and one of them was an invitation to come down to the Ohio State House when the bill goes up for debate, which will be in October, I think, to testify in opposition to the bill. So that's something I'm planning on doing in October. I'm going to go down to the State House, dress up real nice, like a good boy, and rip into these two representatives.
I was going to say, are you going to get on, after you're done, plug the podcast?
Oh, absolutely.
Please.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, plug your podcast to all of the 50, 60, 70-year-olds in the room.
Hi, everyone. You know radio? What if it was on the internet?
What if it was on the internet? The internet, what's that?
Welcome to my fireside chat.
It reminds me of, just this line of thinking reminds me of when Zuckerberg was protesting.
Oh, God. Was testifying?
Testifying. And...
all
you know,
the old white
had
people.
No idea what was happening.
Yeah.
And just wanted to take a stand.
Yeah, which when you think about it is kind of terrifying, because when you have legislation that people are trying to push forward to save, like, net neutrality, and the people who are voting on this have no idea what the fuck is going on. Even though they're in the subcommittee that specifically deals with this kind of issue, they're still, like, 60-plus and don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Oof. All right, so I'm going to hop off my soapbox real quick. But yeah, House Bill 658, it's dangerous and it's bad.
Coming out is hard enough. You don't have to care, worry about the state trying to blow your shit up.
Exactly.
All right. What else do we have? We have this from, like, the Redo podcast that we're going to do.
Oh, shit.
About, Brett Kavanaugh?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah, that's his name.
Whatever happened to this story? Is he still being confirmed? Is he being confirmed? Is he...
He's in the process of being confirmed, if memory serves.
Okay.
So, there's a lot of problematic shit about this dude. Like, the fact that he, back in the 90s, he wrote an opinion about how the president shouldn't be able to be subpoenaed, how executive power is kind of above judicial oversight, which is ridiculous for someone that we're potentially nominating to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. He's going to get nominated. He's going to get confirmed. Because, and this is something that I've noticed a lot lately, is liberals like me have been, like, super excited about this big blue wave that's coming. And we're also super good at chatting ourselves up. Like, take, for example, the most recent special election that happened in Ohio.
Right.
Danny O'Connor versus what the fuck's his name, the Republican.
Yeah.
That asshole. Troy Balderson. Troy Balderson is an asshole.
It's elected official Troy Balderson.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes, elected asshole Troy Balderson. And I'm saying this living in Johnstown right now. The county I'm living in, Licking County, went 60-some% to Kavanaugh, Balderson. Sorry.
Balderson.
I'm getting all these assholes mixed up in my head. To Balderson. And I think it went 58% to Trump back in 2016.
Right.
So it's a deep red county. And so let's see here. So liberals immediately took the opportunity on social media and everywhere to talk about how we almost got it.
Right.
We almost won. We may have lost, but we were super close in the losing, and that counts for something. No, it fucking doesn't.
Right.
It's just absolutely inane to me, like, the mental acrobatics that liberals and Democrats have been going through to try and chalk things up as wins that aren't really wins. And this is something I've kind of been thinking about a lot lately, not deep thinking, but like cursory surface level thinking. What's the plan in 2020?
Well, if you think about this, just this election locally, I mean, it's going to be, he's going to be sworn in and then going to automatically be running again.
Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of like, oh, we get a do over, but it's, you know, it's just looking as just really depressing because you're like, all of these counties except Franklin are red.
Yeah.
You know, you could probably sway, I don't know if I have the, I don't have the results here. I just have the 2016 base benchmark here. Mm-hmm. But it looks like you could sway Delaware.
Yeah.
Maybe. But everything else. And so the strategy for him is just to mobilize more votes in Franklin, I guess.
Yeah. Which, I mean,
it was a sound strategy. I mean, they only lost by, what, a percent?
0.9%, I think it was.
So I guess it was, but it's very hard to win that way.
Yeah. And it's,
I'm not going to sit around here and say that I know better because I know fuck all about political strategies.
But. Yeah. I mean, me either, honestly. but
so I'm trying to figure out where I should shut up about things I don't know, but it's, just doesn't look, just historically, it doesn't look great right now.
Yeah, and that's another thing. That's something that I've been
thinking. But this also reminds me of Democrats resting on their laurels before the 2016 election.
Yes, and that's what I was going to start talking
that's
about.
That's the thing that is really scary.
Yeah, because
that
go ahead.
They're gonna rest, and they're not going to campaign as hard in these red districts, and that's, have we talked about that on this podcast before?
Not yet.
About we should bring that up because I think we both had, or you had a take, and then somebody, yeah, weird a Facebook post that we both participated in a while ago, this is an offshoot of this conversation, but it was kind of born from the Max Temkin rant on Dubai Friday. Where he was talking about how the political strategy for next election cycle is not going to be hearts and minds ideology type, because what he says is that, you know, that's bullshit. Because you can put as much effort into it, but with the same amount of effort, you're going to win more votes by mobilizing people that are already on the same side as you.
Yeah.
So why not do that? And that is what, I mean, I obviously I don't know the people that are running O'Connor's campaign, so I don't know if that's the strategy that they're putting forward, but it looks like that they're doubling down on Franklin and trying to get the most votes there.
Yeah,
but what were we talking about? So I was saying, so somebody came forward and posed, like, you know, we shouldn't be talking like this, we shouldn't be saying that people can't change their mind because they can, and you should be able to have a civil discussion with somebody that doesn't share the same opinion as you.
Yes,
and,
you should.
And you should be able to.
But that's not how it fucking works.
So you have to separate ideology from political strategy and say, what is the more efficient way, effective way to have my staff and have our interns, what should we focus on? And we should definitely focus on mobilization, because mobilization in this country for elections is not where it should be. And if it was where it should be, the left would take elections a lot more than they do right now.
Yeah.
But it's not where it's at. It's not where a lot of modern democracies are or should be. That's what I'm supposed to say, or trying to say. So yeah, that whole rant on the O'Connor thing. Around that, I was listening to 538 mm-hmm. on my way back home, back to Lima, because mm-hmm. I drove on the night that I came up to Columbus. I drove from my parents' house at like 12:30 to get here in Lima at 2:30, mm-hmm. go to sleep, and then go to work at 7. So, yeah, it wasn't great, but it wasn't as shitty. The day wasn't as shitty as I thought it would be. So that was good. But that 538 podcast was actually interesting enough to keep me lucid.
Thank God.
Thank God. And so they were talking about the special election. It hadn't happened before they came out with the podcast. So they were just talking about what O'Connor would have to do, speculation type stuff. I'm not really into 538 for speculation and stuff like that. I'm mm-hmm. more into the more ideological debates that they have, which is they had this debate where is socialism mm-hmm. in the term democratic socialist mm-hmm. Is that a winner or loser for the Democratic Party as a whole?
Okay.
Not talking about the platforms themselves, mm-hmm. But
just the word socialism itself.
Right. Saying because we have, you know, this case with Ocasio-Cortez in New York, Democratic Socialists are on the rise of the zeitgeist, right? It's been a move, and I was shouting at my radio. At my speakers, because it's been a movement. It's been a movement for the past 15 years.
Yeah.
But people didn't actually know about them until like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Right? So, or pay attention to them until Sanders' campaign. Mm-hmm. And there was a whole, the whole thing about, is the Democratic Party ever going to accept these more left wing ideas and left-wing people, or are they going to do what they've done since forever and take the moderate way and snub all of these democratic socialists? But the ideological debate was that the term democratic socialist is either a winner or a loser, and thinking about the demographics that do vote, mm-hmm. it's almost obviously a loser, right? Because only older people, Democratic Socialist is a winner with people in their 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. But above that, it's polling, it's going to be decreasing as you go up the chain. And that's the amount, the people that vote are in their 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
So it might be a loser for Ocasio-Cortez and who else? Sanders and what's the other guy's name? I'm blanking.
Yeah, I don't know.
It might be a loser for the Democratic Socialists, but they have to run as Democrats anyway in order to actually run a viable campaign. And that kind of points to where I am in reading, because I am reading Profiles in Courage, mm-hmm. JFK, and the guys in there, there's like a whole, it's basically the struggle between the opinion of your constituency and what's right. Mm-hmm. And I just told you the story of Webster and how Clay was trying to get Webster to orate on the fact on the side of the compromise of mm-hmm. 1850, and try to calm down everybody so civil war didn't break out. And so Webster has this whole, he has a fight with himself, and it's with a lot of the people in this book. They have this fight with themselves of, you know, do I really love my job,
mm-hmm.
or do I need to do the thing that's right?
Yeah.
And they'll do the thing that's right for the losing of the seat or whatever. Mm-hmm. But so obviously Daniel Webster makes a speech, and the Civil War is postponed for another 15 years. Which, I mean, that's a victory, right?
Yeah.
But this is the way you see it. It's not as, you know, we're not on the cusp of civil war right now. At least I hope not.
Christ.
but democratic socialists, do they have to abandon? Do Democrats and democratic socialists have to abandon ideology to get votes? Is the main concern for the party going forward?
Mm-hmm.
Because the political landscape in America right now is so right-leaning,
mm-hmm.
or at least appears that way. The electorate is so right-leaning.
Yeah.
The people that actually vote. If we don't change that population of people that actually vote, then yes, it is going to be a losing. You know, we're not going to have this blue wave.
Yeah, and it's hard too because so. What was it? In the 2016 election, 42% of voters didn't go to the polls. They didn't vote. And going back to the Max Temkin bit, the matter of mobilizing people and how that can be effective, I have to imagine at least some of that 42%, which is predominantly younger people, would have some faith in more liberal ideologies like democratic socialism.
Right.
A lot of those voters who didn't show up were Bernie supporters in the primaries. But they felt so a lot of them felt so disenfranchised when he lost the primary and
right.
they didn't like either option, even though I'm getting really sick of that. I was sick of that argument in 2016 and I'm really sick
right.
of it now.
Right.
Because look at where the fuck we are right now. But
right.
I don't know if even mobilization is going to work, to be completely honest, because there are so many people who are completely disenfranchised and just have no faith in the system whatsoever, and they genuinely
right.
believe that no matter who we elect, it's going to be the same shit, different day, and, I don't know. It's super disheartening.
Well, to kind of look on the bright side, historically, and this is probably just intuitive, but
mm-hmm.
they were also talking about how turnout from the opposite party of the president is always higher
mm-hmm.
when in the subsequent elections after that president is elected.
Yeah.
And so what you know, the discussion was, you know, are people more motivated or do they go to the polls out of hate? And I think it's both, right?
It has to be
a combination of those two factors.
I feel like
anything
I kinda,
to get people out to vote is a good thing, but
I feel like I kind of disagree to a point because we
okay.
already ran the simulation and it was the 2016 election because what platforms did Hillary run on that you can remember, besides not being Donald Trump?
Mm-hmm.
42% of Americans didn't vote. She won the popular vote, but she didn't win where it counted.
Right.
So, I honestly don't believe in the upcoming elections that hate is going to be that much of a motivating factor for people, because we already ran this simulation. We're like Dr. Strange. We've run the simulation 5 million times, and in every
right.
outcome, Donald Trump wins the presidency twice in a row.
Right.
He's a two-term president. And we're all just going to have to sit back and bitch about it on Twitter and watch the gradual dismantling of human rights in the United States, and it's going to fucking suck.
Well, and that's the thing that happens if we don't change the electorate, mobilize the electorate, actually get exciting candidates in the seats.
Yeah. And I know I sound like a super downer right now, but I
right.
just so the listeners at home know, I'm fielding texts right now, which is really rude on a podcast, but from a organizer from the Ohio Democratic Party for doing door knocking. So I am doing as much as I can to be like active and help the Democratic Party right now.
Right.
Even though I sound like I have no hope whatsoever.
Right. And like the thing that you get from listening to Due by Friday is like, you're like, wow, Max really hates the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
But he has, you know, he's fighting for the side that he thinks is right. So.
Exactly. And he was a campaign he worked on the Obama campaign. He worked on the Hillary campaign. I mean, like, I talk shit, but I worked on the Hillary campaign. I had my own mobile phone bank, which was super weird because I was in the Air Force at the time and it was kind of illegal. But I set myself up in the day room of my dorm building with my cell phone and with my little MacBook Air, and was going through the call sheet and trying to call as many people as possible. Hey, vote for Clinton. But, like, yeah, we both do shit. We just talk shit, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually haven't been doing as much as I should, probably. So maybe I'll get back into the political discourse someday, because, you know, I was a huge, I think everybody was most enthusiastic when Obama was running, either running for president or was president.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, because he was a genuinely exciting candidate. He was someone that people could rally behind. And I totally understand the same thing, that it's like, Trump is like Bizarro Obama. He is title.
Bizarro Obama. Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, you're right. That's the exact reason why I decided to read Society of the Spectacle, because Guy Debord. That's his name. Because Guy Debord, super ahead of his time, basically reacting to both Hitler and Stalin, and saying, you know, socialism isn't inherently bad. It's just that there are demagogues out there that have used politics to their own will and to destroy any type of the out-group, I guess. For their own power, whatever. But the reason why I read Spectacle, and why I read On Tyranny, is, you know, I might be sounding like a huge liberal left cuck right now, but like, these are things that you need to get ready for. Like, you need to verse yourself in these kinds of thought experiments, saying like, hey, if this happens, what am I prepared to do? What am I prepared to do if, you know, like, hey, it doesn't affect the main crowd of people that are here, but like, my uncle might have gotten deported because he's not an American citizen and he's from a Muslim majority country. Mm-hmm. What do I do when that happens? You know, like, stuff like that. Or, you know, all of like my friends who are gay, bisexual, or trans, like, what do I do if, you know, they can't serve in the military?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do I stand up for that? You know, how do I stand up for equality in healthcare? How do I stand up for, like, rethinking these sorts of things with a clear mind post 2016? And trying to get back into this one, because 2017, all of 2017 for me, and probably for a lot of liberals, was just a reaction, a shocked reaction to where we are and what had been happening under our noses without us knowing it, or or without us giving it any thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the subtle racism and the mixed with the tinderbox that is the mainstream conservatism, and those things running together, creating this, you know, the thing that is the Trump administration.
Yeah. And it's something that's been happening for a long time. And it, you kind of touched on this earlier, and this is something that, like, I kind of have.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry if I didn't have my thoughts organized there.
Oh, no, dude, that was good. That was too, that was okay. Super good. The no, I got to you. But so this, I don't want to say orchestrated. I'm not going to go into this whole Q conspiracy bullshit. Right. But conservatives have been recognizing the importance of an election that happens in between the 4 years. That's right. How essentially we got to the position where there's a Republican majority and they know what to do with it. That's when back when President Obama was still President Obama, and the conservatives led this movement to say, we don't want to confirm Merrick Garland because there's an election going on right now, and you shouldn't have the ability to put someone on the bench when there's an election going on. Even though he's a fucking president, he has the right to nominate people. And so because of these carefully planned steps that conservatives took for the past, honestly, almost a decade, and probably further back than that, we're looking at the potential dismantling of Roe v. Wade, the potential reintroduction of very Jim Crow-esque laws, and like, it's going to be a constant battle every day for liberals to kind of seize that power back and do everything they can to, like, stand in the way of the conservatives that are currently on the warpath, because they've been prepping for this and we've not. You said earlier about sitting in our laurels, and that's something that if we want to actually advance the progressive ideals that we, the majority of us, have, that's not something we can afford to do anymore. But I think this is a pretty good place to end the podcast, because I'm getting hyped and angry.
It was on tyranny. I was like, which book was I reading that was talking about this? He was talking about inevitable politics and how you shouldn't get on the side of thinking everything is just going to happen, because that's when the things that you didn't think would happen will happen. You shouldn't just sit and do nothing because you think that, well, the blue wave is going to come, so we're going to figure this stuff out, everything will be fine. Because that's when the opposite of that happens, and, you know, the next thing you know, you're the day after the election, and everybody, like I know where I was, my headspace was that day, like, tried to lock everything out and, like, just go through my day. Like, that could be a lot worse. That could get a lot worse. And we just need to be ready. I don't know. This is really militaristic and sounding like a bad MSNBC podcast right now.
So, before we close, I'm going to lighten it up.
Do it.
All right, so I'm going to read some titles.
Do it.
These titles are threads on the subreddit r/seduction.
Okay.
Masculine energy equals freedom. Inspiration with dates/things for her. How to pull supermodels in Mexico. Do bios even matter in online dating? She lost interest after second date.
I think that does it for us.
Yeah.
From back here at the cat ranch. Yoshi did a crime.
Yeah, fucking Yoshi.
Fucking doing, Yoshi.
Doing tax fraud.
Yoshi committed tax fraud, and McDonald's. Do something for me real quick, Dylan.
What you need?
Go to McDonald's.lol.
Oh, shit. McDonald's.
And then describe what you see there. McDonald's.lol.
I see a nightmare landscape. The Hamburglar is a war criminal.
And war crimes are delicious.
Amazing. Isn't it amazing?
That's fantastic.
That is the end of the podcast. You out there who is curious to see what is going on with McDonald's.lol, in the show notes, click it right now.
Do it.
All right. That's the end.
Bye.
Fuck it. Good night.
Shit, dog, we fucked up. Hey there, it's Dylan here. We got a little hype at the end of the recording session, forgot to do our plugs. If you want to follow me or Devin on Twitter, we are at Dylan Bickers and at Devin Nava, respectively. If you want to check out our websites, you can come to either www.masthead.tech or devinnava.com. I'll let you figure out which is which. Thanks, as always, to the incomparable Villainous Beats for our rad-as-fuck music. And thanks, of course, to our listeners. We don't pay to advertise this podcast, so the only way we'll get out of Ohio is if you tell your friends in cooler places about us. I guess that's all for now. I love you with all my biggest heart reacts. Bye.